The Pharisees were, I was surprised, those in the temple might have been. And I also had Zacchaeus on that list of surprised individuals of Luke chapter 19. Didn't get time to talk about him too much this morning. And honestly, I'm okay with that because as I was preparing the sermon, there was a lot of stuff that of course comes to mind when you think about Zacchaeus. It's an incredible true story that happened back here in Luke 19. And the editing process began, and the editing process was pretty hard on old Zacchaeus. I took a lot of that information out to make it kind of a sub point of this morning's sermon. And then when that didn't work out, I thought, well, this is a great opportunity for me to take some of the stuff that I've been thinking about and studying about Zacchaeus and put it back in there and make it its own sermon. So that's what I decided to do for this evening, is to take another look at Luke chapter 19. This time, the opening verses of the chapter, we'll go all the way down to verse number 10. And if you want a verse to memorize, and who doesn't want a Bible verse to memorize, right? The one for this lesson is Luke chapter 19, verse 10. We'll get there soon enough. But that is a verse that we all need to be working on memorizing so that we understand the Lord's mission and what should be our own mission. But we won't start there. We'll start in verse number 1. Jesus entered and passed through Jericho. You know the city of Jericho. Just a smidge north of the Dead Sea. It's pretty due east of the city of Jerusalem, a little north, mostly east, though, of the city of Jerusalem, and in close proximity, too. We're talking maybe 25, 30 miles. So this city was a nearby place. It was a city of interesting history. When I think about Jericho, I can't help but to think about Joshua chapter 6, which records the conquest of this city for God's people. And we recall at that time, way, 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 way before this time in Luke chapter 19, but in that time, Joshua chapter 6, this city was fortified, had a wall around it, you know, and the children of Israel, according to their obedience to God's plan, defeated that city. God gave them that city, and we see a wonderful combination of grace and faith and works all coordinating together to give the children of Israel a long, long time ago the city of Jericho. Well, here, all these many years later, Jesus is passing through, and there was a man named Zacchaeus. Verse number 2 tells us about him. He was not just a tax collector, but a chief tax collector, and he was also very rich. Probably he was rich through mostly honest means. Now, not all of the tax collectors of this time were honest. So maybe Zacchaeus had prospered at some point through some ill-gotten gains. More about that later on, though. The chapter and verse lets us know what his job was. He was a tax collector, not a very liked person in first century Israel. And he was very rich also. He wanted to see Jesus, which is very refreshing to my mind. Here is a man who had a lot that this world has to offer. We briefly talked about being rich this morning. There are a couple of ways to be rich. You either have a lot of money and can buy just about anything you want, or you reduce the number of things that you want. You take pleasure and happiness in the things that you have, not inventory and stock of the things that you don't have. Well, Zacchaeus was a rich person materially, and he wanted to see Jesus. This is a bit of a horse of a different color from the rich man we see in Luke chapter 16. He was rich. The rich man in Luke 16, obviously he was rich, and he didn't want to see Jesus until it was too late. And then he thought about not only his soul, but the souls of his five living brothers, whom he wanted to be saved. Well, Well, this rich man, Zacchaeus, in Luke chapter 19, he wanted to see Jesus. Only problem was the crowd was big and he was not. Chapter 19, verse 3 lets us know that the crowd of people who wanted to see Jesus was so large and Zacchaeus was short in stature. He was a smaller person. At this point in Jesus' ministry, word has spread. And people are aware of the miracles that he's doing. They are aware of the teaching. You remember, we read about this a lot in the Gospel according to Mark. Jesus instructs his followers and those witnesses of the miracles that he did. Jesus instructs them to tell nobody. Don't tell anybody about this. And that seems rather peculiar. Why wouldn't Jesus want this news to spread? Well, Jesus, of course, wanted the good news to reach far and wide. But Jesus also was very aware of the logistical challenges that might present themselves. So here is one such challenge. Jesus is passing through the city of Jericho, and everybody knows who he is, and it turns into one of those kind of awkward phenomenons where everybody knows Jesus, everybody wants time with Jesus, they all want to see Jesus, and so what ends up happening is very few people end up seeing him. You know, just logistically, the challenge being what it is. There are so many people that Jesus is almost inaccessible to them. Well, Zacchaeus, he's a smart man. He understands the situation that's before him. And so he's a pretty industrious fella too. He realizes he's not going to get to the front of the line. He realizes he's not going to get that front row spot. But when I think about Zacchaeus here, I'm often reminded of all of the time that I've spent staking out spots to watch the Disney parades from. We would go and see, all right, where's the best spot for us to get? And then well before the parade would begin, you know, I would be there just kind of, you know, watching over a family-size place of concrete here for us to have a good seat. Zacchaeus had already missed that boat. It wasn't possible for him to get that kind of access. So he does something else. He sees a sycamore tree, verse number 4 lets us know, and he climbs up that sycamore tree so that he might see Jesus pass that way. He had given up any kind of real moment of meeting Jesus. He just wanted to see him now. You know, he just wanted to lay eyes on Jesus. And so he climbs this sycamore tree. These sycamore trees are populous in this area. They're hardy trees, big, full, plentiful green leaves when it's their season, and a lot of branches, obviously contributing to all those big, full leaves. You won't find me climbing a sycamore tree anytime, but if you're so inclined to climb a tree, this is a good tree to climb. A lot of branches, right? A strong tree. It can hold you up. And Zacchaeus hops aboard to climb this tree, just hoping that he would see Jesus. He knows he's not going to be able to shake his hand or exchange words of conversation with Jesus. He just wants to see the man. Don't lose sight, no pun intended, of Zacchaeus' passion here. Zacchaeus wants to see Jesus so badly. How badly do you want to see Jesus? Think about that question as we proceed a little further into this true story about Zacchaeus. How badly do you want to see Jesus? Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus so badly, and literally just see him, not see him in an appointment kind of setting, but just lay eyes on him, that he climbs the sycamore tree hoping just to be able to gain a glimpse of Jesus. Well, Zacchaeus is in for a real treat. Because, verse 5, Luke chapter 19, verse 5, as Jesus passes by, he sees Zacchaeus, and he speaks to Zacchaeus. Now, Zacchaeus, he didn't know this was coming. He could have never foresaw this. He just wanted to get a glimpse of Jesus as he passed by. The crowd was too deep. He was too short for him to gain any kind of vantage point to see Jesus, not even on his tippy toes, not even on a little stool that he might get. He couldn't see Jesus that way. So he climbs up this sycamore tree. Jesus sees him. Jesus, of course, is all-knowing. He knows that Zacchaeus is there. He knows why Zacchaeus is there. He knows how badly Zacchaeus wants to see him. And Jesus speaks to Zacchaeus. Not just any words, though. Words that will make this man's day. Jesus says to Zacchaeus, "Make haste and come down, for today I must stay at your house." Jesus tells Zacchaeus, "Spudo, hurry up and come down." That's the verb that Jesus uses. And the Bible lets us know that Zacchaeus did exactly this. Look at verse number 6. He made haste. He came down. He received Jesus joyfully. And those who saw it, they had something to complain about, right? Why is it that people always have something to complain about? Here is a beautiful meeting between Zacchaeus and Jesus. Jesus is going home with Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus couldn't be any happier. He receives Jesus joyfully. We'll come back around to that point in a second. But this happy reunion or introduction, I guess I should say, between these two parties, this happy introduction is sullied by some complaining. Think about that the next time that you lob a complaint. Those complaints might be ruining someone's good day. And we don't want to do that, right? We shouldn't want to do that. So those who saw this, they complained and they said about Jesus, "He is a guest of a man who's a sinner." Going back possibly to Zacchaeus' profession of a chief tax collector. Perhaps Zacchaeus' record wasn't squeaky clean. Perhaps Zacchaeus had, through deceit and thievery, gotten some of the things that were his possessions. Perhaps, right? Or maybe these people just knew something else about Zacchaeus. Maybe they just knew that he wasn't the kind of man he was supposed to be. But they get upset with Jesus because he dares to spend time and entertain the company of a sinner like Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is there, aware of all of this, and he says to the Lord, Luke chapter 19, verse 8, I give didomai is the verb. Zacchaeus is probably here explaining to the Lord things that he has already been doing. When he says, "I give," it's not a past tense verb. It's also not a future tense verb that make it a present tense verb. But it's also a middle voice verb, which is kind of an interesting little combination of things. And probably Zacchaeus is explaining to the Lord here that this is something that he's in the habit of doing. And also, Zacchaeus is likely explaining to the Lord, this is something that he is presently and in the future committed to doing. So Zacchaeus is a rich man who is charitable. And he says to the Lord that he gives half of his goods to the poor. Now, why just half of his goods? Was he holding out on the poor? No. Continue reading verse number 8.
He says, I give half of my goods to the poor. What do you think Zacchaeus was going to do with the other half? Was he going to live high on the hog and kind of, you know, enjoy the creature comforts and luxuries of life? Doesn't sound like it. Luke chapter 19, verse 8, I give half of my goods to the poor, and if I have taken anything from anyone by false accusation, you see, maybe Zacchaeus had acted in his duties of being a chief tax collector. Maybe Zacchaeus had acted on some bad information. Maybe somebody had a grudge against somebody else and told Zacchaeus that he made more money than he really did. Maybe Zacchaeus was used as some powerful person's pawn to go and kind of make life unnecessarily burdensome on somebody else. Maybe Zacchaeus himself was a little given to corruption. We're not at all losing sight of the fact that this man was fallible as a human being himself. But he says that he's giving half of his goods to the poor. Remember, he's a rich person. So this is a considerable sum. And he's explaining to the Lord penitently, if I've done something wrong, I will restore fourfold. Fourfold. He's a man trained in the business of money, income, interest, that sort of thing. And he has more than the Clint Ritchie crash course on it that he gave his girls this morning in the car. This man Zacchaeus, he's fine-tuned in this mindset, in this world. And he says, if anything has been taken under false accusation, right? If the person owed it, it was owed, and that's just the way it's supposed to be. You know, Jesus is not condemning paying taxes here. But if any fraud had taken place, if Zacchaeus had done anything wrong, he says, I'm going to make it right. I'm going to more than make it right. I'm going to restore it fourfold. Give it back to him with interest. You know, this figure fourfold is an interesting one. In Exodus chapter 22, Exodus chapter 22, verse 1, as God is giving laws that would govern his people, if you harmed or accidentally killed a man's sheep, you had to give him four sheep back. That was the rule. Four sheep. There were other rules for other kinds of animals. I think maybe you had to give someone five oxen if you killed his ox. You want to be extra careful around oxen, I suppose. But Zacchaeus here, he's aware of the law. He's aware of what's right. He wants to see Jesus. And he says, I'm giving my considerable goods to the poor, and if I've done anything wrong, I will restore it. I'll make it right. I'll restore it fourfold. Jesus said to him, Luke chapter 19, verse 9, today salvation has come to this house because he also is a son of Abraham. Jesus is no doubt here acknowledging that Zacchaeus was a Jew. Obviously, that is true. But here, with these terms, Zacchaeus is a son of Abraham. I suppose if we're thinking about studying for Bible Bowl, we would want to pay attention to these New King James terms. Zacchaeus is called what by Jesus? He's called a son of Abraham. And if you look in the very next verse, we'll connect some dots that might add to the significance of that description. Jesus here in Luke chapter 19, verse 10, remember the verse that we said we would memorize. Jesus says, for the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which is lost. For the Son of Man has come to seek and save, and to save, rather, that which is lost. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which is lost. Jesus here in Luke chapter 19, verse 10, calls himself the Son of Man. Same structure as
his previous announcement that Zacchaeus was a son of Abraham. And Jesus calling himself the Son of Man is a rather fascinating study. Why does Jesus call himself the Son of Man? He's God. He's divine. He's deity in the flesh. And that's the point. Jesus here in calling himself the Son of Man is conveying his humanity. He is communicating the fact that he is equal to man. Jesus also did this with God, you may recall, in John chapter 5, verse 18. Flip over there and notice it with me if you'd like tonight. John chapter 5, verse 18. Jesus calls himself the Son of God. Jesus calls God his Father. John chapter 5, verse 17. My Father, Jesus says, has been working until now, and I've been working, Jesus says. And the Jews heard Jesus call himself the Son of God. The Jews heard Jesus call God his Father, and they were enraged. They sought the more to kill him, John chapter 5, verse 18 says. You know why? Here's the reason why. Not only because he broke the Sabbath, air quotes around that, broke the Sabbath. He didn't break the Sabbath. He broke the Sabbath in their way of thinking, which was flawed. So Jesus also said that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. John chapter 5, verse 18. There are, of course, as you know, a number of world religions, not all of whom accept Jesus as God's Son. And so these world religions that do not accept Jesus as God's Son, they frequently call Jesus a good prophet, a good person, a good moral teacher, some might even say. And frequently they say, Jesus never claimed to be the Son of God. Maybe you've heard a Jew or a Muslim friend say that. Jesus never claimed to be the Son of God. Well, look again at John chapter 5, verses 17, 18. Jesus calls God his Father, and he knows exactly what he's doing. Jesus is very strategic and very, very clued in to the way the Jews would interpret these words of his. And he was right on the point, right on the nose, Jesus was, because in John chapter 5, verse 18, the Jews are more enraged. They want him dead more. Not just because of what they alleged he was doing on the Sabbath day. They wanted him dead more because he called himself the Son of God, which made himself equal with God. calling oneself the Son of God made him equal with God. Jesus calling himself the Son of Man made himself equal with man. Jesus calling Zacchaeus a son of Abraham may be more than just an acknowledgement of his obvious Jewish heritage. Jesus calling Zacchaeus a son of man, Zacchaeus a son of Abraham, may have lumped this individual, short Zacchaeus, in with the very, very distinguished group of whom Abraham is the leader. Not just physical Jews. There was something that Jesus knew about Zacchaeus that made Zacchaeus special. And Jesus here says that salvation has come to his house, again, at a time before the last will and testament of Jesus Christ had been ratified. Salvation came to these individuals before Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection in ways differently than it comes to individuals now after Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection. And Jesus also announces that Zacchaeus is a son of Abraham, perhaps drawing a short line between the two. Seeing something in Zacchaeus, as Jesus
As Jesus is all-knowing, he knows everything about all of us, including Zacchaeus. Jesus sees that Zacchaeus is a special person who wanted to see Jesus. And when this day all started, Zacchaeus was just hoping to see Jesus like I'm seeing you right now, like you're seeing me right now. And little did he know that Jesus would actually come home with him. And the Bible lets us know that Zacchaeus, when he heard that news, he was happy. I wonder if we got the news out there tonight after service that Jesus was coming home with us. I wonder how we would feel. I wonder if we would be happy about that. I wonder if some of our people might be a little nervous about that. Jesus is coming home with me. I might need a 5-minute head start to go and clear out some of the search history of the internet. I might want a 5-minute head start to go and get rid of some of the shows that I have on my DVR. If Jesus is coming home with me, I might need to go home and move some things around so that he doesn't see the things that I don't want him to see. If Jesus is coming home with me, I might need to go home and hide some of my immodest clothes that I like to wear. If Jesus is coming home with me, I might need to, dating myself a little bit here, go home and take some of the CDs that I have and tuck them somewhere where they won't be out in plain view. If Jesus is coming home with me, I might need to get there first and get the Bible out. We have a Bible around here. Here it is. And we'll set the Bible out front and center. If Jesus is coming home with me, I might need to put on a little bit better of a show. Zacchaeus doesn't appear to have any of those worries or concerns. When Jesus announces that I'm coming home with you, Zacchaeus, he's happy. He's happy. And I hope that we would all be happy too, because I've got news for you. Jesus is going home with you. Jesus is going home with all of us, because he is an omnipresent God. That means he's everywhere. He sees the things we don't want him to see. He knows the things we wish we could hide from him. Let's be joyous like Zacchaeus was when he heard that Jesus was coming home with him that day. I've also got news for you too, that there's always a sycamore tree. There's always a sycamore tree. When Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus, he used a sycamore tree to get a better glimpse at Jesus. And so the message I want you to take away tonight from that is there's always a sycamore tree. Metaphorically speaking, there's always something that we can use to get a better glimpse at Jesus. If we want to see Jesus better, there's always a sycamore tree we can use to help us do that. The Bible is a wonderful, that's not even strong enough. The Bible is the best resource to see Jesus. You want to see Jesus, do you? Pick up the Bible and read it. You know, a lot of us will spend a couple hours in front of the TV watching a football game, and we'll have the audacity to say to a Bible class teacher, "I didn't have enough time to read. Ahead in the book of Jude. I didn't have enough time to do that." Really, if we want to see Jesus, there's always a sycamore tree. We can always gain a better glimpse of Jesus. In the Bible, in our relationships with other people, in our families, in our fellowship with one another, in our unity, there's always a sycamore tree. There's always a better way for us to get a better look at Jesus. Zacchaeus, he had to think fast. He had to think a little bit outside the box. And he had to find this sycamore tree. He had to climb the sycamore tree and get there where he could see Jesus. We're going to have to do the same thing in our lives. We're going to have to find our metaphorical sycamore tree, climb it, be there so that we can get a better glimpse at Jesus. We can do that because there's always a sycamore tree. Zacchaeus is a person whose actions led to his salvation. And here's where I want to end, because I want your actions right now to lead to your salvation. This evening, if you need to put Christ on in baptism, I'm begging for you to do that. You'll never regret that decision. Taking care of your soul, saving yourself is something that you'll never regret doing. And if we can help you tonight, we would love to. You're not going to be saved the way Zacchaeus was saved, though. He lived before the last will and testament of Jesus was ratified. Now, for us to be saved, just like Zacchaeus was saved, we have to do something different. We have to hear and believe and repent and confess and be baptized. And we would love to help you with that tonight if it is your need and desire. If you want to study more about that, we're up for that as well. We would love to study more about God's plan of salvation with you. Let us know. We'll do it at the time that's convenient for you. But don't put it off, because salvation is too important to put off. To those of us who are here as members of the Lord's church, Christians saved, that's great. We need to make sure, though, that our responsibility continues well after our baptism, because there's more that we need to do to please God than just hearing, believing, repenting, confessing, and being baptized. In fact, there is a sixth step to the plan of salvation, one that sometimes I fail to mention, and it is living faithfully. We need to make sure that we live faithfully, so that when Jesus comes, he will find us as one of his. If you need to respond to this invitation tonight, we would be so happy to assist you. While we stand and sing, why don't you come, please?
Thank you for listening to the Augusta Road Church of Christ. Located in Greenville, South Carolina, the Augusta Road congregation worships God in spirit and in truth in a friendly and loving environment. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Augusta Road COC. And if you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, we would love for you to come by for a visit.